Okay, good afternoon once again. We're resuming the session. It's 2:30. This time we're going to hear from Ms. Sarah Lyons. She's from Cornell University, and she's going to talk about double cropping of corn silage rotations with winter cereal as forage crops.
Sarah? Good afternoon, everyone. Again, I'm Sarah Lyons, and I'm a PhD student in the Nutrient Management SPEAR program at Cornell University. Today I'm going to give you a brief introduction to agriculture in New York as well as double cropping systems. Then I'm going to go over one of our double cropping projects with you before telling you what our next steps are in the program. So forage crop production in New York is focused around large-scale dairy operations. Traditionally, it's one crop per growing season, and that alternates between corn and alfalfa usually. Because upstate New York has a very short growing season, it leaves a really wide window of opportunity to introduce another crop into the rotation. And this leaves an opportunity for winter cereals harvested as forages for livestock consumption. There are numerous motivations for growing double crops. One of them is an environmental benefit because double crops are a form of cover cropping. They can help reduce erosion, utilize end-of-season nutrients left over from the previous corn crop, increase soil organic matter, as well as introduce some rotation diversity. Something that's really beneficial for the farmer is that they can provide an emergency crop species. So if there happens to be a weather problem or some other environmental stress to the main crop, they then have a double crop to fall back on to not have to buy forage elsewhere for their cattle. It could also help farmers increase their yield per unit land area because they're growing these double crops on the same land that they would grow their main crop. And it also provides an additional opportunity for applying manure. A lot of farmers in New York do apply manure in the fall without planting anything after. So double crops can then make it more environmentally sound to uptake some of those manure nutrients that are applied in the fall. There are some challenges with double crops, and these include the timely seeding of double crops. Oftentimes, the corn silage is harvested quite late, and there's also a very early frost in upstate New York, so this can influence when you're able to seed the double crops. It could also cause a reduction in the summer crop yield, because a lot of farmers will wait to harvest the double crops until they have more biomass. That causes their corn to be planted late and can lead to other issues. However, one solution to this would to possibly select a shorter season variety of their main crop. So the purpose of this study here is to find out what kind of yields we can expect from these winter cereals, to determine the most economic rates of nitrogen for these crops, as well as see if there's any specificity related to individual sites, to see if there's anything related to the yields on those sites. So this is a three-year study. The first year double crops were planted in the fall of 2012. We had triticale, cereal rye, and winter wheat fields. They were planted in separate fields, so I won't be comparing them today. There were five rates of nitrogen that were applied through agritane-treated urea at 0, 34, 67, 101, and 134 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The plots were organized in a randomized complete block design in four replicates. And they were harvested at May at Flagley stage. And I did want to point out that all of these fields were under farmer management in the fall. So we had no control over seeding rate, over manure applications in the fall. They determined when they planted them. So the only thing we did was came in the spring and applied our treatments. There were 62 trials across New York. Most of them were on farm sites. This encompassed five regions of New York, as well as a range of 39 different soil types. And here's the breakdown of our different species here. Here are some representative pictures of our trials. So on the two on the left here, you can see these were responsive to nitrogen application. You can tell by these dark patches. These had the higher rates of nitrogen applied. While this site was not responsive. As you can see, it's fairly uniform looking. So we had quite a range in responsiveness to nitrogen application. There are a whole suite of measurements taken on these plots, including soil samples before nitrogen was applied at GreenUp, or after the snow melts and the plants start growing again. These include samples that involve soil fertility and some other parameters. We also took the basic forage quality after harvest. And the most important thing we collected were these field histories from the farmers themselves. We needed to know what they were doing before we came in and applied these treatments to see if that could explain what was going on in our results. The two main components I'm going to focus on today are the dry matter yield of these forages, as well as the most economic rate of nitrogen, or the MERN. And this is calculated based on fertilizer cost, forage value, and yield. And we use a quadratic response for curve to determine these values. So as you can see, there was a wide range of the optimal yields at these optimal nitrogen rates. We have some sites that at the optimal nitrogen rate, they didn't yield very much, and then some yielded quite a lot. So we really want to investigate what's causing these differences in optimal yields. Here's a breakdown of the averages. So the average yield at the most economic rate of nitrogen ranged from 2.5 for wheat all the way up to 4.5 megagrams per hectare for triticale. These values are fairly close to the median, so they were representative of all of the groups. And the average MERNs ranged from 60 to 73, so there wasn't a whole lot of variation there. With additional nitrogen application, here on the left we have total N uptake on the x-axis, and the y-axis is the yield at that most economic rate of nitrogen. With increased nitrogen uptake, there wasn't, with increased nitrogen application, there was an increase in yield. And then on the right here, we have crude protein against our nitrogen application. And with increased N uptake, we did see an increase in crude protein, not necessarily meaning there was an increase in yield as well. Here are the yield at the most economic rates of nitrogen plotted against the most economic rates of nitrogen. And as you can see here, there's an interesting pattern going on. 32% of the sites didn't require any extra nitrogen, while another 39% required between 78 and 100 kilograms of nitrogen to reach their optimal yield. So based on this data that we've received from these farmers, there was an economic analysis done, and we wanted to see what are the break-even points for these yields. What do farmers need to obtain in order to not have an economic loss? So starting with this column, with no impact on corn silage yields, as well as not purchasing any additional fertilizer, the break-even point is 1.7 megagrams per hectare. So they have to have at least that amount to not lose any value. However, if they wanted to apply some nitrogen, if the MERN was that within that 78 to 100 nitrogen range, and still not to have an impact on the corn, their break-even point increases to 2.3. And it increases here if you have a 2.2 megagram per hectare reduction in your corn silage yield. It's either 3.8 break-even yield or a 4.5 break-even yield if you add nitrogen. So we took this chart and plotted our yields against it to see where our results fit into this categorization. So as you can see here, almost all of our plots had at least that initial break-even yield, having no impact on corn silage as well as no additional fertilizer. And as you increase the thresholds here, so if you want to apply some nitrogen and you can manage a little bit less corn yield, we still had 24% of our rye and 51% of our triticale plots yield above 4.5 megagrams dry matter per hectare. So now I'm going to go over some possible reasons for this quite drastic split in yields. As you can see here, we looked at the pH. So here we have soil pH and yield at the MERN. They're pretty uniform, and this is actually exciting. It means that our farmers are being good about managing their pH levels in their soil. However, it's not telling us anything about the differences in yield. But if you go over to the phosphorus, this is a Morgan extractable phosphorus test against the yield at the MERN. The sites that had a higher phosphorus level did have higher yields, and we think that these lower yielding plots with high phosphorus maybe because of parameters not related to soil fertility. We did have some plots with compaction issues and drainage problems, so we have a feeling that could be what explains that. Manure is another big one that we want to look at, especially related to the phosphorus levels. So for cereal rye, we start to see this trend that there's more sites that did not require any additional fertilizer if they received manure in the fall. Triticale has an even stronger trend where every site that didn't require any additional fertilizer all had fall manure applied. So here's a breakdown of the percentage of plots that didn't require any additional nitrogen in the spring. 40% of the cereal rye plots and 50% of the triticale had fall manure applied, while only 9% of the cereal rye and none of the triticale plots that required no additional nitrogen, they didn't have any fall manure applied. So at the MERN, yields range from between 1.5 and 6.7 megagrams of dry matter per hectare, and about a third of the sites didn't respond to any additional nitrogen fertilizer. We think this may be to increase soil fertility, specifically related to manure application and soil test phosphorus. About 40% of the fields required an additional source of nitrogen, between 78 and 100 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And we also saw that increasing nitrogen application, regardless of yield, led to increased nitrogen uptake by those crops, as well as an increase in protein concentration. So in conclusion, overall we'd say that double cropping with winter cereals can result in an economic gain. It can be really beneficial for the farmers in upstate New York. And we will say also that fields with manure histories, as indicated by the soil test phosphorus, and fall application of manure are more likely to yield high and that would not require any additional nitrogen applied. So what's next? We want to do some further analyses on these field histories. We really want to get to the bottom of why the MERNs are between zero and then another range of 78 to 100 kilograms of nitrogen. We really want to determine what drives this yield difference. We also want to investigate alternative statistical models for determining that most economic rate of nitrogen. Right now we're using the quadratic response curve, but we're also looking to alternative models for that. We want to determine if there's a yield versus quality aspect of these winter cereals. So if you wait additional weeks for increased biomass, how much does that compromise your quality? And we also want to look into brown mid-rib sorghum as an alternative to corn. Because sorghum has a shorter growing season, it may be able to fit into a double crop rotation better. So with that, I'd like to say thank you and ask any questions you have.
Excuse me, so we have time for questions. Any questions from the audience?
Yes. The question was, what other quality parameters are we looking at, and how does that factor into the economic analysis? I don't believe we're incorporating it into the economic analysis right now. However, we have measured NDF, acid detergent fiber, neutral detergent fiber, lignin, and a couple other parameters, and those seemed even across the board with all of the nitrogen rates. They didn't change.
Were all the fields corn silage prior to planting the winter cereals?
No, they were different types of crops, and that's another analysis we'll do. The majority of them were for corn silage. We had one plot that was sweet corn, a couple bean fields. What else? We had one fallow, so there was a variety.
Well, the ones that were corn silage, did you look at what the nitrogen rates were on that crop prior to going in?
Yeah. So this analysis, what we've done so far is we basically just went down the line and say, did you apply fall manure, yes or no, or did you apply spring manure, yes or no? But we are going to investigate further the specific rates that were applied in the past. We're focusing on the organic sources of nitrogen because we found that if any synthetic nitrogen was applied the previous year, most of it gets lost throughout the winter, and we don't see any soil test evidence of that in the spring.
Okay, what about yields for corn silage following?
I don't believe so. I don't believe we followed the fields past the year that the farmers were involved in this.
Okay, I think we will keep Ms. Lyons in the widget so that if there's further question later, you can raise that question. Then, if we have time, remaining time to before the end of the session, so we will proceed to the next speaker.